On this episode of Industrial Talk, we were on site at the 29th annual SMRP conference. And if you weren't there, you missed a lot. So put it on your calendar for the 30th annual SMRP conference. Well, it would be this year. And you know what we were talking about in this interview? We're talking about innovation. We're talking about the deployment of technology when it impacts supply chain from one of the leading companies in the world. Let's get cracking.
Welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast with Scott McKenzie. Scott is a passionate industry professional dedicated to transferring cutting-edge, industry-focused innovations and trends while highlighting the men and women who keep the world moving. So put on your hard hat, grab your work boots, and let's go.
All right, welcome to Industrial Talk. Thank you very much for joining the number one industrial-related podcast in the universe. And I don't think I'm overselling that one bit. We are, once again, broadcasting from the 29th annual SMRP conference. We're trying to get our, I guess, world back in order. And this is sort of a collection of the best maintenance and reliability professionals around the world. It is that important. And it's a great venue here in St. Louis. And we get to talk to some of the best. I mean, I'm just, I'm all giddy because of it. That's what it's all about. And we couldn't make this happen if it wasn't for Accurant and Fluke Reliability. You got to go out to Accurant. I'm looking at their website right now, and it says solutions, real estate facilities, and asset management. It's right there. I'm looking at it right now. Gain the insights to transform how your organization manages its physical resources. You can't argue with that. And then, of course, I go out to Fluke, and you know the color of Fluke. It's got the big F there, and it's got that classic gold-yellow Fluke. And this is what's interesting. You go out there, they break down the barriers between data systems and teams by aggregating everything into one place. Yeah, that's dead sexy. I'm all into it. Absolutely wonderful. Okay, we're going to be talking Amazon. We're going to be talking with a gentleman by the name of Jeremy Good, and he is good. I bet you never heard that before.
Nope. Never great, only good.
Jeremy Spectacular.
There you go.
All right, Jeremy, welcome. How you doing, man?
Good.
Well, I like that. I like that good. Good.
Yeah, that's right.
Double. So anyway, you're here at the conference. Give us a little background on who you are and why you're such an incredible professional, and then we're going to venture into what you talked about here at this conference.
All right. Well, I've got a lot of years of experience. I started off with Fiat Chrysler. Actually, Chrysler back then.
I was going to say, and then you saw the acquisition of Fiat. Right.
I saw lots of acquisitions. The merger of equals with Daimler.
Oh, yeah.
And then we went to Chrysler Group, and then a private equity had us for a little bit. We almost went bankrupt.
I remember that.
Then the merger with Fiat, and now the merger with PSA with Stellantis.
It's a lot of.
And I laughed while we were doing the merger with Stellantis.
No, it's funny because there's just a lot of drama over there. I remember that. It was just like, another thing. Oh. Another challenge. Oh.
There is.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Look it.
And we had good products. I mean, Jeep, Dodge.
Oh, yeah. No, nobody's going to debate that. I mean, it was just a lot of drama going on over there.
There was.
But look at you. You got a smile on your face. You survived.
Right. That's right.
And now you're with Amazon.
Now I am.
What do you do?
So I am a maintenance. So I'm a regional manager for maintenance and reliability. So I have the Southwest region right now. This week, it's going to be announced that I get a little bit broader responsibility, where I'll have a third of North America for the large fulfillment, the ARS, Amazon Robotics Center. So they're the large fulfillment. Yeah.
You threw in robotics, and of course, that's cool, right?
Yeah. Well, imagine a site with 8,000 to 10,000 robots in it.
And really?
Yeah. That moves anywhere from 600,000 up to a little over 1 million packages per day.
At all the facilities or one facility? What?
At each one of those facilities.
Get that. Is that the type of commerce that is taking place? God, it's amazing. Yeah. That's a hell of a stat.
Yes, it is. And so you think of cell towers.
No, I see.
Amazon's very similar to that. So you as a customer, so their goal is to give you a package in 2 hours or less. That's where we want to be, okay? And in order to do that, you have multiple fulfillment centers strategically located to where if one site is down, another one can then do the fulfillment for that package. Roughly.
You're throwing out a lot of stuff here. You're saying two hours or less. I'm on your side. I order a widget, right, whatever it might be. When that process starts, you're trying to fulfill it in 2 hours.
Correct. So when you push that button, within the first, I'll say within the first 5 minutes, Amazon already knows what fulfillment center is the least expensive for them to bring that package to you within that time frame that you have if you have Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
If you're on the coast, right now I think there are six sites that can guarantee within 6 hours of when you order. A little trivia is the fastest is 12 minutes from the time somebody pushed a button and it was delivered.
You understand the problem here. You guys are establishing an expectation, and you're constantly pushing it from a consumer perspective. I have an expectation that I'm going to get that product, and I'm going to get that product relatively quick, and I'm not going to wait. And that is a heck of an expectation. And I think you're disrupting logistics as a whole.
That's right. That's not a bad thing. That's meeting the customer's needs.
I get you, man. And I'm telling you, I love it. Don't get me wrong, man. I'm all big into, yeah, I need that. I need it. And you make it easy.
That's right.
You make it easy to get that widget. I don't have to sit there and struggle to find a widget. That's there. I go there. Heck of a business model.
Yep. That's because we're focused on the customer.
Yeah, note that, because that is a very important component associated with any business, right?
It is.
You got to focus on the customer. Don't focus on yourself. Don't provide what the customer needs. Solution, right?
That's right.
And solve that problem.
That's right.
And now all of a sudden, you're just screwing up everything just because my expectations are off through the roof. Now, let's talk a little bit about why you're here at SMRP. Tell us a little bit about the topic that you were discussing so that you can share with the individuals.
Yeah, so we talked about challenging the norms. So we have so much technology now that we're losing sight of some of the basics. And without the basics to build upon, the technology starts to unravel.
Okay, you're going to have to expand. What are the basics?
So the basics being knowing and understanding your equipment, seeing how it's the essentials, what we call within Amazon, essential skills, crafts. So knowing that how a bearing performs, knowing what the wear characteristics of different components of the equipment, how a motor runs, how the equipment at a basic level, whether it's rollers, whether it's pulley shafts, gear ratios, whether it's a gearbox, how those things all work together, and know that, not have data just being fed to you saying, hey, the problem's over here and you need to go fix it. If you don't understand the why behind it, then when things change, you end up getting into more problems. And we're talking about letting software. Now, software and technology have its place. They are tools. But they are tools that need to be grown upon off of the basics and off of knowing and understanding those basics.
Is a part of the basics the human element? I mean,
it is. And it's so probably one of the best tools that break things down to the basic is a FAMICA, failure mode
effect, yeah,
with the criticality on how you do the maintenance to maintain that
right
component. So, but it is. They're the skills of what the individual has. When you walk by a motor and it's using your senses, smell, hearing, even taste is one of the senses. So how is that piece of equipment performing? And I'll tell you one of the examples. When you look at a good site to a great site, So you want to go to something where you're running 99%, 99.9999% uptime.
Yeah.
The sites that are different and that differentiate them are the ones that have those skill sets and do things like critical walks where they're walking through the critical piece of equipment and seeing the different components and where they're at and from a health standpoint, and then doing things proactively before they fail.
Yeah, because it does. Because your obligation, your fundamental driver is fulfilling that order in 2 hours or less. That's it.
Correct.
And that does not leave room for any, you know, reactive situation where something was broke down, right?
Correct. Yeah. Well, on critical equipment, there are redundancies built into the sites.
If you notice my note down here, I got a little word that says redundancy. I might not spell it right, but it does say redundancy. I was going to ask that question. So when you start talking about critical equipment, do you, from a criticality perspective, do you create a redundancy, inventory? It's like here's
no. So Amazon does not build WIP in different areas, work in process, or
right.
inventory
right.
to help cushion. That those are wastes. So, right?
Right.
Because
they are. Don't get me wrong. I mean,
and when you're moving that much product, you've got to look at the equipment and say, okay, the things that are critical to our operation need to be well known and understood, and the maintenance plan for that, including a lot of machine learning and a lot of data points. Our average, we're 5,000 to 10,000 data points in one site coming in, feeding information to us on the health of that piece of equipment and how it's performing, and are there other things that we need to be looking at from it, whether it's heat, vibration,
you name it. So that's a IoT, right? That's a
yes.
IoT solution, data collection, going someplace, and then there's this the analytics behind that says, hey, this is just garbage. This is noisy mm-hmm. data, whatever data. Don't worry about that data, but here, in this little swim lane here, these are the datas that datas. This can I say datas?
He did.
There's a gentleman out there that I know real well, and he's a good guy. And I'm sorry because we're live. I see him. No, don't point away. Just hang tight. Anyway, and then if you're saying, hey, something's out of parameter or whatever in this whatever mm-hmm. analytics, this algorithm, then it notifies.
It notifies and lets you know that there's something wrong.
Yeah.
The thing is, you have to go back and look at the why behind it. Because if you do act on that and you don't see a result, or you don't see an effect of that, then you need to understand the why behind it.
Why of the failure? The why of the problem? Why? What's that why?
Yes, it is. It's all inclusive.
Right.
Because you want to know why it failed. So
because you don't want just pencil whipping and then just sort of sit there and okay, it's fixed now, but you never understood the why, and it could happen again.
Well, we understand, we know enough of the equipment and how it performs that it's not the exception, it's not the normal things for the equipment that catches us off guard. It's the human intervention beforehand, bringing product in that, for example, a bunch of magnets, and they break loose because they're not boxed properly, and now I've got magnets on a conveyor that's going 400 feet per minute or feet per second, and with diverters and all kinds of stuff on it, and it just doesn't perform because it's got magnets stuck everywhere. So it's those things like that create the event that you need to understand, and okay, so now we need to package this differently. We need to do this differently to make sure that it doesn't happen again.
Walk us through that process. So you sit there and you're clearly trying to understand the why. Fantastic. That's real important. Where does that go? I mean, that's a human conversation, right?
So that goes back into the systems on the inputs. So, and we have, there's a term that they use, on a product description that shows this product can be packaged only this way, or this way, and it needs to have this much density around it or whatever to protect it.
Really?
and then it goes through. So you may not realize there's a lot of those things from the lessons learned. So we know we had this failure, so now the product cannot be packaged this way, the way it was that it failed. Now it can only be packaged this way and this way.
So let's say I'm packaging. I'm the packaging person. I'm trying to fulfill this order. Then it comes in on a screen, right? And I look at it, and it's magnets. We'll just keep on running with that analogy. Right. So it's magnets. And then I get from whatever interface direction on.
Only package in this box with this material, packing material, with this tape. And, I mean, it lights up for them so that it tells you intuitively exactly what you do and what sequence and.
So what if it's a new product? Well, it's like, okay, Amazon, you process a lot. Don't get me wrong. I don't know if you've, it's like trying to find a domain name. Does it even exist out there? Like all domain names. What if it's a new product?
So then it's tested in different variations on boxes and everything else. Yeah, there are some standards that it'll come in at just because of packaging.
Right.
There's less expensive packaging to more expensive packaging as well. So you start with the less expensive, try to make it as reliable as you can, and you work your way up to the more expensive if you need it only. So there is a method and a science to everything.
Yeah, a guy that likes process, me, I love that. I was always process something out. This is exciting and giddy. For me, I just think it's the coolest thing since sliced bread. Eventually, I would imagine that Amazon's going to put a some sort of monitor in my head, and I don't even have to go to the website. I could just sort of say, I need potato chips. And there it is. And it's like, oh, wow, it's right there.
Yeah, we look at your buying habits, so we can have it show up exactly when you do it. But he eats potato chips every Sunday afternoon.
But you do.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I do. Yes, and it's very effective. I'll tell you right now, it's very, very effective. I didn't know I needed those things, but at that particular time, I did, and thank goodness it was right there for me to.
Yep.
Hey, consider these. Yes. All right. The last final question I have is, where do you see all this going? I mean, that's pretty doggone. You're constantly. I mean, every day. Every day, you're making it more efficient. You're always trying to figure out more, better, faster. The Steve Austin approach, right? Yeah. Where do you see it going? I mean, is there a point of diminishing returns, or is just sort of that's it? That's life.
Well, Amazon's extremely innovative. You will see new markets being developed. So right now we're delivering packages. Pretty soon it's going to be delivering food, fresh food. It could be technology in the home. I mean, it's going to go.
For somebody that's just founded on impatience, that's me. I am impatient. Amazon is absolutely it's for me. My gosh. I'm so glad that you... I mean, this is a great conversation. It's pretty cool.
Yeah,
I didn't mean to. There's so much more. I want on my bucket list. I want to just tour one of those facilities just to see it.
Absolutely.
Look at, I know somebody.
That's right.
Well, as I stare at you, creepy, but stare at you nonetheless. How do people get a hold of you? They're saying, "Hey, I like what he's talking about. Jeremy's a great guy. He's good, but he's really fantastic." How do I get a hold of you?
My email is probably the best. goodjr@amazon.com.
All right. Once again, I just want to say thank you very much for being on the Industrial Talk podcast, because you were absolutely wonderful. All right, listeners, we're broadcasting from the 29th annual SMRP conference here in St. Louis. It's fantastic. It's got a collection of the best maintenance and reliability professionals known to man. Or woman, or people, whatever. And we're brought to you by Accurant and Fluke Reliability. You got to go out to their website because they're special too. They've got great people, great solutions, great companies. So don't hesitate. And then finally, you're saying, I got to get a hold of Jeremy. Fear not. We're going to wrap it up on the other side. All of the contact information that you need to be aware of. So stay tuned, and thank you very much for joining Industrial Talk.
You're listening to the Industrial Talk Podcast Network.
All right. That is Jeremy Good. He goes by Jerry. I didn't mention it in the interview while we were at the 29th annual SMRP conference, but you can call him Jerry. I have his email address out at industrialtalk.com. They're doing fantastic things, as you could tell by the interview, that they're doing incredible things at Amazon, big time. It's an exciting time. Now, as we wrap up, I'm reminded of a quote that I just recently heard again. Confused minds say no. Don't be confused. We have got to, in this industrial age, this innovation industry 4.0, we've got to educate. That means we've got to do everything we can to consume that content because we depend on you each and every day. Because you're bold, you're brave, you dare greatly. Jerry is. And many of the great people who have been on Industrial Talk are all bold, brave, and daring greatly. Let's change the world. Industry's changing the world because you guys are people. So another great interview right around the corner, so stay tuned.